Hi, Dave Emery here, side one of For the Record program number 815, Walking the Snake at Al Jazeera. This is being recorded on October 16th of the year 2014. The title of the program refers to a book that we have discussed frequently here on this program for a number of years. It is called Serpent Walk. It is published by National Vanguard Books. That is the publishing arm of the National Alliance, arguably the most important domestic fascist organization behind the Republican Party, sad to say. The book basically is about a Nazi takeover in the mid-21st century by the descendants of the SS, who go underground. They infiltrate the U.S. military after the U.S. is devastated by a series of terrorist attacks using WMDs and martial law is declared. The Nazis take over the U.S. Again, this is set in the mid-21st century. A key component of the book, however, and of the narrative presented in it, is the SS, after going underground at the end of World War II, which they certainly did, built up their economic muscle, which certainly took place in the form of the Bormann capital network involving not just the SS, but frankly corporate Germany and an awful lot of corporate America as well. That just such a thing did happen. And what they do is they buy the underground Reich, buys into the opinion-forming media in the U.S., and they use that to basically change public opinion in a direction that is considered optimum for a Nazi takeover. We have spoken at considerable length in the past about the Bertelsmann Corporation, which now dominates English language publishing, overwhelmingly dominates English language publishing. It was the publishing house for the SS in World War II. Heinrich Mohn was a member of the SS. He was the head of the company at the time. And the firm appears, its disclaimers to the contrary notwithstanding, it appears to have retained all of its Nazi character. A guy named Dirk Bavendam, last name capital B-A-V-E-N, D-A-M as in Mary, M as in Mary. The house historian for Bertelsmann published a number of books, most recently in 1998, which blames World War II on U.S. imperialism, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and Jewish control of Hollywood and the news media. And again, this is the official house historian for the largest English language publishing house in the world. Bertelsmann is also deeply involved with music and other things as well. It is a huge corporation. We have been talking about Serpent's Walk in connection with that for some time. What we are going to do in this program is to examine the Al Jazeera broadcast network, which is out of Qatar in the Middle East. It is financed by the government of Qatar, and it is and has always been dominated by the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood has had amazingly good press in the U.S. Most Americans, not surprisingly, don't know anything about it. It is an Islamic fascist organization that was allied with the Axis in World War II. It then found a very hospitable environment in Western intelligence services during the war, after the war, I should say, including and especially the CIA, who used them as anti-communist cadre. Al-Qaeda, Hamas, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, Al-Qaeda in Iraq, ISIS certainly appears to be among the offshoots of Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood basically spawned all of those organizations. Sadly, although not surprisingly, most Americans know nothing about the Muslim Brotherhood, and in the so-called progressive sector, the Muslim Brotherhood has had very good press indeed. I suspect that is largely born of well-intended ignorance. People in the so-called progressive sector do not want to be perceived as bigots, and they really know nothing about the Muslim Brotherhood, and after the heavy-handed and misbegotten military adventures of the George W. Bush administration in the Middle East, they sort of saw the Muslim Brotherhood as good guys. The fact that elements of the extreme right wing in the Republican Party, people like Michelle Bachmann, have been citing Barack Obama as being soft on the Muslim Brotherhood has perhaps fed into that. The Muslim Brotherhood, in fact, has been adopted, one could say, by the transnational corporations. Their political and economic agenda is one of corporatism. That is what Mussolini called his fascist system. Il Duce said, il fascismo e il corporatismo. Fascism is corporatism. And that the corporatist economics of the Muslim Brotherhood have endeared it to the transnationals, to the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, and allied institutions. Given the fact that there are approximately 1.6 billion Muslims in the world, more than a sixth of the world's population, it should not come as a surprise that a fascist organization with a fascist agenda should basically be used to help to implement corporatism in the Muslim and Arab worlds. And that is what's happening. That is what is happening. We have gone into that in a number of programs. I've done a lot of work on the Muslim Brotherhood. Most recently, For the Record program, 812 has a good discussion of the Muslim Brotherhood's sort of divine or theocratic laissez-faire economic philosophy. Sadly, I think the ongoing ignorance of the so-called progressive sector is really working to the favor of international fascism. I think that in addition to ignorance, a grotesque form of Orientalism manifests through that. I think a lot of the progressive sector looks and says, in effect, yes, our brown-skinned Muslim brothers and sisters, they are so quaint with their beards and their hijabs, but we do love them so. And it is bitterly amusing to me personally to watch the so-called progressive sector, including gays and feminists, embrace the Muslim Brotherhood and or its various offshoots like Hamas, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, one of whose founders, a guy named Sami Alarian, is quite literally a hero to the so-called progressive sector. And again, given the significant presence of gay rights and feminist activists within the so-called progressive sector, it is absolutely wild to see them being supportive of the Muslim Brotherhood. Basically, the Muslim Brotherhood feels the same way about gays as they do about clitorises. If you find one, get rid of it. And they practice what they preach. They are, what is to say? They're a fascist organization with an overtly fascist history and a corporatist philosophy. And again, the Muslim Brotherhood dominates Al Jazeera. Now, Al Jazeera bought out Al Gore's current TV. He's now suing them for non-payment. And they are now a very significant present in the U.S. or on the U.S. media landscape. Cable TV packages include Al Jazeera, and to a large extent, one is seeing, well, to a growing extent, I should say, one sees Al Jazeera referenced along with other media voices. That is disturbing given their Muslim Brotherhood, given the fact that they are dominated by the Muslim Brotherhood, and given the fact that they are an explicit advocate organization. What we're going to do in this program is to take a look at a story that came out last year alleging that Yasser Arafat, the late leader of the Palestine Liberation Organization and himself a protege of the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, Haj Amin al-Husseini, who held the rank of general in the Waffen-SS. He also was a protege of Otto Skorzeny, the SS colonel and post-war Odessa leader who was deeply involved with the Middle East and other things. Yasser Arafat died in 2003, I believe it was, and no autopsy was performed. Many years later, specifically in 2011, a journalist from Al Jazeera who had a background in State Department security in the U.S., translation, spook, okay, was given a number of personal effects by Yasser Arafat's widow, Sua Arafat, and Ms. Arafat said that these had been used by Yasser Arafat in the hospital. After testing of these personal effects, including some underwear and other things he allegedly had with him in the hospital, as we're going to see, a lot of the things that he had with him in the hospital were destroyed. An announcement came out courtesy of Al Jazeera and some Swiss, quote, experts, unquote, that Yasser Arafat had been poisoned with a radioactive substance called polonium-210. That's P-O-L-O-N as in Nancy, I-U-M as in Mary. We're going to examine that allegation. Now, the story got a lot of play when it first broke, and then when critical analysis began to come in, which proved that this was essentially a bunch of BS, the story died very quickly. But as is generally the case with the media, the MSMs don't apologize when they make a mistake. They don't even do like the gal on Saturday Night Live. You know, oh, never mind. It just died. And as we're going to see, not only are the claims that Yasser Arafat was poisoned with polonium-210 dubious at best, what is so significant about the story is that this was an Al Jazeera op, okay, OP. It was an operation. It was an Al Jazeera operation from start to finish. A few key facts, and we're going to examine articles at length and in detail here. Polonium-210 is indeed highly radioactive, a piece the size of a grain of salt, if ingested by a human being, will kill them. It is extremely radioactive. It also has a half-life of 138 days. That's because it is so radioactive. What that means, basically, is that within 138 days, half of the original mass of polonium would have experienced nuclear decay and would no longer be radioactive. Again, it's very short half-life of 138 days, and its extreme lethality and extreme radioactivity are inextricably linked. The notion that a piece the size of a grain of salt would have had anything detectable after 11 years. Bear in mind that half of the substance decays within 138 days is simply not credible. Beyond that, we're going to take a look at some other things as well. Again, it was Yasser Arafat's widow, Sura Arafat, who gave the alleged personal effects of Yasser Arafat to this Al Jazeera fellow, Then after, quote, testing, unquote, it was announced that, yes, Yasser Arafat was poisoned with polonium-210. Again, it has a half-life of 138 days. A piece the size of a grain of salt, if ingested by a human being, would kill them. The notion that excretia, urine, stains, and other things on underwear allegedly worn by Yasser Arafat in the hospital or used by him in the hospital would have yielded either any measurable trace of polonium or any radioactivity is extremely dubious. One of the most significant aspects of the story as well is the fact that Sura Arafat did not have an autopsy performed at the time that her husband died. If she was suspicious, it would seem that performing an autopsy immediately after Arafat passed away would be the way to go. I would note in that context that Yasser Arafat and Sura Arafat lived apart. She lived in Paris. He lived in various places in the Middle East, most recently, I believe, in Ramallah in the West Bank. And it is also worth noting, although the broadcast is in Arabic, I have a link to a television interview with Yasser Arafat's personal physician, in which he states in no uncertain terms that Arafat died of AIDS. The fact that Sura Arafat and her husband lived hundreds or if not maybe thousands of miles apart, the fact that she did not call for an autopsy at the time of death, the fact that his personal physician attributed the demise to AIDS suggests at least a very distinct possibility that Yasser Arafat may have been a closeted gay. Perhaps, I suppose, an intravenous drug user, but gay would be the more likely possibility. We should note in this regard that the Arab and Muslim world are traditionally very hostile to gay rights, and certainly if in fact, as may well have been the case, Yasser Arafat was a closeted gay, if he had come out, given the extremely negative attitudes towards gays in much of the Arab and Muslim world, that would have been very damaging to his warrior persona as the leader of the PLO, had it come out that he was in fact gay. But we're going to go into this in the articles that I'm going to read. But again, in terms of Serpent's Walk, this story, really a propaganda exercise, is an Al Jazeera op from start to finish. And the real significance of this is the fact that we have yet another fascist mouthpiece helping to form American public opinion. For some time, I don't believe that is still the case. It may be. I know Al Jazeera's radio broadcasts were being featured on the Pacifica Radio Network, which is really, again, surreal, given that that is a progressive political outlet. And again, the Muslim Brotherhood feels the same way about gays as they do about clitorises. If you find one, get rid of it. So it is more than a little grotesque. But as you listen to this, again, bear in mind some of the contradictions that I have already brought up. And remember that Al Jazeera, basically, they didn't just flog the story. They appear to have created it. And the guy who basically shepherded this thing around and to whom Sir Arafat's widow gave Arafat's effects was a former State Department security person. Translation, again, spook. He met Arafat when he was a bodyguard assigned to protect him when he came to the U.S. Some of the facts. A CNN story of November 7th of 2013 report tests, quote, moderately support, unquote, that Yasser Arafat poisoned by polonium. The Swiss Center pointed out some caveats. The testing was based on, quote, a very small specimen, unquote. The center noted that blood, urine, and other specimens were destroyed after Arafat's hospitalization. Bear in mind that no autopsy was performed when he died, that courtesy of his widow, who did not live with Yasser Arafat when they were married. continuing with this CNN story. 8 years passed between the death and the exhumation. Because polonium-210 has a half-life of just 138 days, its detection after 8 years is, quote, very difficult and subject to uncertainties, unquote. The, quote, chain of custody, unquote, of Arafat's personal effects from the time he died and when the center began to study them in 2012 is unclear, it said. Paddy P-A-D-D-Y, Regan, R-E-G-A-N, a professor of radionuclide metrology in the physics department of the University of Surrey in Guildford, England, agreed that the years that have elapsed since Arafat's death make it more difficult to estimate how much isotope was there originally. Quote, it's like a blindfolded man holding the tail of an elephant and using that to estimate the weight of the elephant, Regan told CNN in a telephone interview. Quote, you can do it, but there is a huge amount of extrapolation involved, unquote. And the mere presence of the isotope in amounts significantly higher than what occurs naturally does not necessarily mean that that is what killed Arafat, he added, citing the scientist's measurement of a urine stain on Arafat's underwear. Quote, if you were being cynical about such a thing, if you wanted to put a false trail out there, you could put a tiny amount of polonium-210 on that urine stain, he said. That doesn't mean that the urine stain came from inside him. And the possibility that that may have been the case is one to be very seriously contemplated, although, again, obviously, we will never know for sure. The New York Times of that same day, November 7th of 2013, has a story by Isabel Kirshner, K-E-R-S-H-N-E-R, Swiss report supports theory Arafat was poisoned. And this mentions that a Russian team of forensic experts originally concluded that Arafat had no traces of polonium in his remains. Skipping down in the story. Yet last month, the head of the Russian team told the Interfax news agency that Russian experts had found no traces of polonium in Mr. Arafat's remains. Soon after, the Russians denied having made any statement. And the French physician who attended Arafat said that basically they had ruled out that he had been poisoned. A bit of a caveat here. French doctors, actually, no, this was not his physician. It was a doctor who taught at that hospital. His physicians at the French hospital at which he was treated are enjoined by French law from making public statements about their late patient. In other words, under French law, a doctor cannot make public statements about a patient that they have treated. Again, note that Arafat's widow did not have an autopsy performed when he died, which would have, of course, been the best way to make any sort of forensic determination had there been suspicion of fair play. Bear in mind that his personal physician, who was not French, said that Arafat died of AIDS. This is an article from the Times of Israel of November 13th of 2012. Absolutely no way, unquote, Arafat was poisoned, says top doctor who teaches at hospital where Palestinian leader died. It's by Annika Pomeray, P-O-M-E-R-A-Y. Skipping down. A leading French doctor who teaches at the Paris hospital where Yasser Arafat died in 2004 has broken the official French medical silence surrounding the case to tell the Times of Israel, based on Arafat's medical report, that there is, quote, absolutely no way, unquote, the Palestinian leader was poisoned. Dr. Roland Massé, M-A-S-S-E, a member of the prestigious Académie de Médecine, who currently teaches radiopathology at Percy Military Training Hospital in the Paris suburb of Clamart, C-L-A-M-A-R-T, where Arafat was hospitalized 2 weeks before his death on November 11th, 8 years ago, spoke to the Times of Israel to scotch the allegations of polonium poisoning 2 weeks before a group of scientists are set to take samples for testing from Arafat's body. Note that this is not from Arafat's body, but from some effects that he allegedly had in the hospital, although many of those were destroyed. Continuing, Massé said the symptoms of polonium poisoning would have been, quote, impossible to miss, unquote. Noted that Percy had tested Arafat for radiation poisoning and revealed that the hospital specializes in the related field of radiation detection. Quote, a lethal level of polonium simply cannot go unnoticed, unquote, he said, speaking as workers in Ramallah on Tuesday began the process of preparing Arafat's grave for exhumation. Dr. Thierry, T-H-I-E-R-R-Y, Revel, R-E-V-E-L, the head of the hematology department at Percy, who signed a medical report on November 14th of 2004, has refused to comment on the case. And again, I believe that he's actually enjoined by French law from commenting on a patient whom he had treated directly. The doctor quoted there apparently was not someone who was treating him directly, but he did read the report that the hospital at which he worked had worked up after Arafat's death. Continuing, indeed, medical confidentiality laws prevent doctors in France from divulging any information on their current or past patients. It was Arafat's family that chose to make public the Palestinian leader's medical report. Al Jazeera, a Qatar-based news outlet, said in July that it had received the report from Arafat's widow, Suha, H-U-S-U-H-A. In a telephone interview with the Times of Israel, Massé said flatly, to quote, there is absolutely no way the symptoms described in Yasser Arafat's medical report match those of poisoning by polonium, unquote. Massé elaborated, when in contact with high levels of polonium, the body suffers from acute radiation, which translates into a state of anemia and a severe decrease in white blood cells. And yet Arafat did not present any of those symptoms. What did decrease was his platelets, not his white blood cells, said Massé, who may have been prepared to discuss the case because he does not treat patients at Percy. He only teaches there. He said the medical team at Percy would have had no need to consult with him given their high level of expertise. Noting that radiation detection happens to be one of the areas in which Percy Military Hospital excels, Massé said that while Arafat's medical report contains no specific reference to a test for polonium, it does specify that a number of tests were conducted to check if the patient had been subjected to radioactive substances. Polonium-210, which Yasser Arafat's widow Suha believes may have caused her husband's death, is a rare chemical that has become more familiar to the public a few years ago when it was used to murder Alexander Litvinenko, the former Russian spy in London, in 2006. If, quote, abnormal levels of radioactive polonium, unquote, were found on Arafat's clothing by scientists in Switzerland in July, 8 years after his death, Massé said, the Palestinian leader would have had to have been in contact with an extremely high level of the chemical before his death. This would have been impossible to miss for any doctor at the time, Massé said, not to mention dangerous for other people surrounding Arafat. Remember the Litvinenko case, Massé continued. We discovered after his death that hundreds of people had been subjected to various levels of contamination in the UK and other countries as well. Massé was in charge of national radioactivity supervision in France in the 1990s as head of the Office for the Protection des Rayonnements Ionisants, OPR. BPRI, the Bureau for Protection Against Ionizing Radiation, which worked under the authority of the French Ministry of Health and the Ministry of Labor to protect French citizens and the environment from the effects of ionizing radiation. In the job, he said, he received daily alerts about the presence of far lower levels of radioactive elements that would have been necessary to kill a man. These alerts came from waste collection sites, for example, and from people who had recently undergone medical treatments involving the application of radioactive substances. We're going to continue with this analysis in SOD 2. This concludes SOD 1 of For the Record program number 815, Walk on the Snake at Al Jazeera. This has been recorded on October 16th of the year 2014. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.